Hey, welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Got a little bit of housekeeping to get to before we get to the main event. We've got Chris Costin from the Muley Fanatics Foundation in studio today. No more awkward phone calls. I was actually able to drag him in studio. There's a trending picture right now of a wolf that somebody got on game cam. It's been going around social media circles. Dave got it. I got it. If anyone knows who that is or where that was, get in touch with us. The text line is 775-884-9910 or click on the website, the Contact Us tab. That's 991fmtalk.com. Shoot us an email if you know any of the context or background on those pictures. Without further ado, Chris, thank you for coming into studio today. For those of you that don't know, Chris Costin is the chapter chair of the Muley Fanatic Foundation here in Northern Nevada. It's the Sierra Front chapter, right, Chris?
Yep, Sierra Front chapter.
Let's dive right into how you got involved with the organization. You've been on the show a couple times. I got a memory span of about 2 hours. So go through it one more time. How did you get involved with Muley Fanatic Foundation?
So mule deer have always been near and dear to my heart. And back in 2019, I was just looking for a way to get more involved with the hunting community and the conservation efforts that are near and dear to my heart and play into that. So I started looking around, talking to some of the guys at the Mule Deer Foundation, MBU, some of our local groups, Nevada Muleys. Ended up hearing a podcast with Randy Newberg, and they were doing podcast with the guys from headquarters in Wyoming.
What's the guy's name? Joey?
There's Josh Corsi and Joey Fagel. They were the two guys that started it.
Okay.
And I believe it was with Chris Steffen. He's one of the other main chapter guys. He kind of runs all the group, helps everybody get their chapters started and rolling. And so I believe it was with Chris, but I'm not 100% certain like you. I don't have the best long-term memory there.
Yeah, I just remember that first banquet over at the Elks Lodge.
Yeah.
It wasn't you up on the microphone. Was that, Joey is the name that comes to mind. Somebody came out from Wyoming, I think, for that first year.
Yeah, and you probably don't remember me because I was nervous as heck.
Okay.
And I like kept it to about three words. But yeah, Josh came. Josh is.
Maybe that's who I'm thinking of.
Josh, yeah. Yep. Josh got the big mustache. He's a pretty memorable guy.
Okay.
I don't know if we get Joey to travel too much. He's a Wyoming boy, stays at home.
You heard the podcast with the guys from headquarters. Besides the species, which I think both you and I are in agreement, mule deer is the absolute best.
Especially in velvet.
Yeah. But
archery.
What was it about the foundation specifically that spoke to you or that you said, okay, this is where I'm going to put my effort?
It really came down to one thing. It was the funding model. We retain 70% of everything we raise. You know, we get to say how we use it, what projects we put it into. HQ stays out of it. We send 30% back to do mule deer conservation across the West and to keep the lights on at headquarters. That 70% that we retain is allocated by us and our group alone. So I mean, that right there, just knowing that the lion's share was going to stay in Nevada and we were going to get to pick projects that we felt had the biggest impact being locals and knowing the mountain ranges, knowing the areas, knowing the predator populations, the idiosyncrasies that fall into our area, the wild horses, water.
Feral, Chris.
Sorry. Yeah, I got that one wrong.
Well, I know. I as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, stay in your seat. Stay in your seat, Henry. Stay in your seat.
He gets me on that.
Yeah, Nevada is absolutely unique in that. I mean, I'd say universally in the West, mule deer kind of suffer through some of the same things across Montana, Wyoming, Idaho. But yeah, Nevada is kind of a unique animal, especially we're so dependent on precipitation here. And as we sit here, winter's going to show up at some point, right?
We can only hope.
Hopefully.
Wait.
Yeah.
And it cannot show up this year on February 22nd.
Yes. That was last year. Dave was out, on your tractor plowing the driveway?
I was.
To get to the banquet?
To get to the banquet, yeah. I was moving a bunch of snow so we can get the wife's car out to get to the banquet.
When we get to talking about last year's banquet, that snowstorm.
It was great. I mean, we needed the snow, but yeah, it just could have been a different day.
Now, I think when I went to leave, there was about 6 inches on my truck.
Yeah.
When we were rolling out, and I was like, oh, man, thankfully, knock on wood, I live in that part of town. So does Dave. So it's like, oh, okay, this isn't too bad.
Well, I can limp this home.
Yeah, for some of the other event goers, I'm sure it was kind of a nightmare. Before we get into the banquet stuff, you talk about that model 70-30. Isn't there some sort of match from the state or from Endow that goes into that as well?
Yeah, and so we work closely with Endow because they have a 2-to-1 matching grant. So we've been putting a majority of our money with Endow because of mainly the mule deer projects that they have that are easily accessible to us. But we've also reached out to the National Forest, BLM, in the hopes of branching out. But with Endow, 2-to-1, I mean, it can't be beat. I think we've put on the ground in 3 years, like somewhere just under $300,000.
Holy smokes.
Now, what are some of the projects that you've helped in funding or funded entirely for mule deer?
So a lot of fire restoration. I mean, we all know myself and Pat Beecham, my co-chair, we're both wildland firefighters for over 10 years. So we've seen the impacts. We've all seen it every summer. And what it's burning is winter sage lands. It's devouring, you know, the stuff that they need to eat. So it's burning up their grocery stores. So we try and focus on northern Washoe, but really anywhere within the state that has had critical burn in critical habitat, winter habitat. But one of the ones that we're really proud of is we partnered with Endow, who is partnering with a new company that designed solar ear tags for cattle. But we helped fund that initial buy of those to get them into the field. So we're hoping to move out of the big bulky collars, which, you know, you see them in the field. My feeling is that, you know, they don't help with predation. I don't think they, you know, that it, a deer carrying around anything that big and they have to be removed and bucks necks swell.
Right.
But these solar ear tags are awesome. They're 5 years. It's clipped into the ear. It's, you know, they can barely feel them. It's a pretty non-invasive process. And, you know, we get them in, we do a health check, we do everything, we clip that tag on and we send them back out into the field and immediately start gathering data on winter, summer, forage grounds, migration routes, establishing key habitats and corridors for them. And that's a big one that we're really, really proud of. And then,
do you see that data? Do you guys get access like through a link or something, or is it strictly kept at the Endow level?
We get it, and we do. We share bits and pieces of it, especially at the banquets. We put out, you know, every project that we do, how we're spending your guys' money.
Right.
So we put out a recap every year of those projects. We bring in Cody Schroeder and a couple of the other biologists. They kind of recap and go over our projects so we can, unfortunately, you know, Cody's job is usually to get everybody really depressed on the state of mule deer in Nevada.
Yeah.
And then we try and come in, build everybody back up, have a fun time, and max out credit cards to raise money and have effects, positive effects on the outcome of the deer.
Yeah, we had Cody on the show, gosh, last year, Dave?
I think we've had him on twice.
Twice now? After he left, after we recorded the episode, I think I walked out and was like, man, why am I doing this to these poor things? Like, good grief, Cody. Have you seen one of those solar tags, Dave?
I have. Yes, I have. They're pretty cool.
Are you, neck gunning? How are you getting them on the deer?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So we had a project early spring, really, because we were checking for pregnancy and how many does had fawns. But yeah, we went out and they had the helicopter guys from New Zealand and the muggers, and they're flying circles and netting deer and jumping on them and bundling them up, flying them in, and then we'd bring them over, get a weight, blood check, ultrasound, general health assessment, and then you kind of clip it in, like if you've ever done cattle and put a tag in the ear, it's an exact same
little
setup.
Handheld punch and just go.
Yeah, it's almost like a leather punch style thing, and you just ear piercing
clip, and
they just lock in.
Okay. Well, hey, I got a couple questions about that, but before we get to it, I wanted to thank Shooting Performance Institute, Jim Irwin's operation down there. He has posted the course dates for the Long Range Hunters Challenge, Dave?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, so that stuff's up on the website. Thank you to Shooting Performance Institute for being a show sponsor. Just go to shootingperformanceinstitute.com for more information. We'll be back with more in just a minute. Thank you all for hanging in there over the break. You are listening to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Special guest in studio today is Chris Costin, the chapter chair of the local Sierra Front Muley Fanatic Foundation. Chris, right before we went to break, I had a question about the solar tags. As far as distribution in the state, is that predominantly, are those just in the Washoe herds or Northern Nevada herds?
As far as I know, they're starting to implement them more and more. The way I remember it being is that we're, the test run is here in Northern Washoe, but they're getting used more and more. So this is kind of like, I think we're in year two or three of using these things, getting the data back and seeing how well they perform, and hopefully continuing to purchase more of these tags and get them in the field.
I'll put you on the spot. How many are out there? Do you know?
I would guess, I know it's over a dozen. I would guess there's two or three dozen in the field now. I believe we put like, the first run was about 5,000, and then I think we did a second purchase at around 10 or 12.
Okay.
But don't quote me. I got to go back.
You quoted with, yourself. It's going to air.
Numbers, yeah. there's ear tags out there.
Okay. I'm assuming you guys try to get bucks and does. What's the mix? Is it like 50-50?
You know, it's really what the helicopter crew and the muggers can turn up that day.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and unfortunately for a couple of them, they would. We got a couple nice bucks in. They let one of the guys go. He ran around us the way they didn't see and up a canyon, and those guys flew a circle and nailed him again.
Oh, my God.
When they saw the ear tag already on him, they kicked him loose and took off again. Yeah, so that poor deer had a bad day, but we try and get as broad a group as we can, but it's really what they can turn up. And depending on the study, I think, you know, primarily for retention rates, for health of the herd and everything, I think the majority is in does.
Right, okay.
Bucks move and travel so much. Does are, you know, more specific in their patterns. And in the rut, you know, you get a lot of movement and bucks don't always return to where they were. That's just my guess, and that's kind of what they let us know.
Over the break, we were chatting about fire stuff and some of the reseeding projects.
Yeah, so I was kind of wanted to hit upon the process in which Muley Fanatics are purchasing the seeds, and it's just not seed, though. The reseeding process is a 2-year process, and so you're also purchasing, well, you were saying herbicides, knock down any possibility of invasive, like cheat grasses or thistles and things like that, right?
Correct. It's as important because after the fire burns, they'll go in and assess it. They'll create a fire perimeter. They'll get polygons drawn, project areas. And then we have to get in, hopefully before any seed can blow in or a new seed bank can be established, get herbicide down on the ground, leave it lay fallow for a year to let that herbicide, you know, wear off. It has a lifespan. And then we can come back in with aerial seeding, drill seeding, hand seeding. There's all kinds of methods, and we're reliant on the biologists in Dow to come to us. You know, we bring up areas. They go, yeah, this is an area where we need it, or this is a project where we need you to get the momentum behind it. Let's get some money in on this, and let's get it started. But yeah, it's a really involved process, and it's also very time-oriented and structured in the process. So in the Petersons, Northern Washoe, we all know 2-1.
Yep. Yeah.
That burnt years ago, and we're now just getting into getting seed on the ground. And in different phases, they have all kinds of different projects that we're in. But yeah, we just did a project where we got some around 1,600 seedlings in the ground with volunteers who came out to help, along with our board members. And so that's a great project that we've been on for going on 3 years now.
So you mentioned volunteers. So on a standard project, how many volunteers would you like to have? I mean, granted, you like to have as many as possible, but like minimum people that come out to volunteer to help maintain our beautiful Nevada landscape and help out on these reseed projects.
A project like that, 10 to 20, I think we got, it's hard. Some of these, especially seeding, is chucker season.
Yeah.
So convincing guys to put the guns down and pick the shovels up is hard. But, you know, 10 to 20, and it's really cool too. Not only are you putting money back in or your time back into the ground and helping us get these projects going, we can get matching grant dollars for Indow for your time out there, and it really adds up fast. Yeah. Your travel time counts. Your time on the ground counts. All of that goes back and is money then used for conservation again.
Yeah, all the miles and everything. And it's not a little bit. I mean, I think in some of these projects, the federal government allows you to charge up to like $35 an hour per person for federal match or for grant match, which is huge when you've got, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 people out there. You know, if anyone's out there and interested in, you know, giving back to our landscape and our deer herds and everything else that needs that land, you know, get a hold.
How do people get in touch? How do they volunteer?
Probably one of the easiest ones is to reach out to us either on Facebook or Instagram.
Okay.
We can get there. We're MFF Sierra Front. That should bring us up. Another easy way is to go to muleyfoundation.org, and you can go to the chapters link, and you'll find the Sierra Nevada or Sierra Front Nevada chapter, and that has all my information there, and you can get a hold of me directly.
Okay.
And that's also on the Facebook and Instagram too.
Are you affiliated with like the Mule Deer Foundation, or is Muley Fanatic Foundation something else entirely?
We are non-affiliated, our own entity. There's a funny backstory there, but we can get into that one later. But we are completely unaffiliated with the Mule Deer Foundation.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Because people have asked that.
Yeah, so. No, and we try and draw very
distinct lines.
Yes. Yeah. No, and it's because of our funding model, how we want every chapter to have their own money and their own use of it.
Gotcha.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
I love conservation groups. I'm actually a life member of the Muley Fanatic Foundation. But I do know not all conservation organizations are
conservation.
The same. I'll leave it at that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some places that have a lot of lights to keep on, and then there's groups like ours that have very few lights to keep on. And
you guys don't have a private jet and tailors on staff?
No magazines. No, you know, everything is kept as low budget as we can, so every dollar goes to where it's intended.
And that's what I appreciate about it.
Yeah, same here.
Do you have any projects coming up scheduled this year yet?
This was an odd year for us. Projects primarily right now are completed. We had to actually earmark money for what we're hoping will be restoration on the Davis Fire.
Oh,
because if anybody's driven out to the end of Fawn Lane, that used to be really prime local bitterbrush forage.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's gone. So we've tried to earmark money for that, but because that fire is so new, we've reached out to the Forest Service and BLM to get a project going. But also because a lot of our projects, our big projects that we've been working on year after year, are kind of coming to a close. So we're reaching out, working with Cody, Katie, everybody at Indow, bringing in some new projects, talking about branching out to Eastern Nevada, Northeast Nevada, areas like that where our funds can be used. So this year we had to earmark, I think around like $30,000-$40,000 and just put it aside because the projects that we need, we make sure we spend our money every year and then we turn around and make sure that everybody who is at the dinner or anyone ever at a dinner gets emailed and we let them know how we spent the money in a letter for that year. But projects this year wrapped up, we'll start talking projects in 3 months.
Okay.
Once we have, after the banquet, we'll have total funds, clear up all of our debt, and then we'll start throwing money around again. And we're always open and soliciting for projects. One of the cool ones that we did this year is we teamed up with Nevada Muleys, and they're doing a project up in northern Nevada where they're doing a poop analysis.
Okay.
So we can
playing with scat.
Dietary analysis.
Yes, exactly. Smearing it and figuring out what they're feeding on so we can get a better idea of key plant species to start focusing in in these projects. And also key habitat to focus on. One of the cool things at the Mule Deer Summit that we were part of is a lot of the speakers were talking about mapping key areas, protecting those, because deer can grow out of those, and we can also focus our conservation efforts in increasing area around those key areas with the key forage, the water, the cover, everything that they need. So identifying those areas, you know, and that goes back to knowing what they're eating, defining that in the landscape. Has all three of those things, feed, forage, and shelter. So,
yeah,
We got to take another break. Thank you to Truck Envy here in Reno for sponsoring the show. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, thanks for staying tuned over the break, and big thank you to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, for sponsoring the show. If you miss a segment, you can always go to the website, 991fmtalk.com. Click on the podcast tab. Everything is archived there. Now the fun part of the conversation, the banquet for this year. Date has been set, Chris?
Yep, February 22nd at South 40 down there in South Reno.
And I have to ask, because I got asked on my way out the door this morning, is there going to be two buffet lines this year?
Yeah. We had some critical points. When you got a prime rib carving station, you've got to have two lines double-sided to get everybody moved through and eaten in time.
All right. There you go, Cynthia. Now, I love that new location right there.
Oh, man, that is great.
Yeah, and way expand, much bigger than the Elks Lodge. No knock against the Elks Lodge. That was great for a couple years. What is new this year for the banquet?
So, I mean, the main thing is second year in a venue. We've kind of got the layout figured out. We're playing with the games. We're getting everything better organized. The menu is slightly different, but we wanted to stick with a nice prime rib dinner for everybody. But we brought in some new hunts. We always change the games up. We've got some new fun games. We got some great new sponsors in. So we're going to have always, you know, we think of ourselves as kind of the blue-collar banquet. We're the working man's place to come have fun. We're target-rich environment. So we're just trying to increase every year. One of my favorite things is our veterans appreciation kind of giveaway. We've stepped that up this year thanks to Legacy, Truck Envy, Performance Shooting, all those guys. Pyramid Fly Fishing, all those guys are jumping in and giving us stuff to give back to our veterans. So that's going to be really exciting. And then we're bringing in Hides for Heroes from the Elks because those guys were always good with us. We're going to bring in a couple different veterans groups just to like get the word out and get some more groups that are working to support our troops, the recognition that they need to get everything rolling. And Hides for Heroes is a really cool one. The Elks, they gather up hides. They get them tanned. They bring them back in and turn them into gloves for vets in wheelchairs.
Oh, very cool. So, okay.
Yeah, that's
man, that is that a Nevada cool. thing? Or
I believe it's with all Elks, but Ed from the local Elks Lodge is going to be there this year. We're making space for those guys to try and get the word out and to talk to, you know, almost 400 hunters who can probably bring a hide or two back home
yeah.
with them.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
What hunts? You mentioned hunts. What do you have there this year?
This is a cool one. We've got Paul Van Diver is with our Northern Cal chapter, but he's also the head of the police union out of Northern California.
Okay.
And he's been donating to us for the last couple of years. Last year, we had a blacktail hunt. This year, Paul's taken off in the fall to go do some big hunts of his own. He got some pretty good stuff lined up. So this year, he's going to donate a turkey hunt for two on his private ranch. It's dripping turkeys. He's just now getting pigs. And year after next, when we do the blacktail hunt, it's a September rut hunt, which is pretty awesome for coastal blacks. But double turkey tag this year, we've got a couple pig hunts down in Paso Robles. Those are going to be up. Those guys have generously offered us a couple of those. We always have our Argentina dove hunt because that's one of the fun ones, and they're going to let us do a couple of those this year. We've got the African safari guided float trip on the Truckee for fishing, and then we got the Pyramid Lake fishing trip. Heritage turkey tag. That's another
nice. Very cool. Yeah.
Big popular
okay.
one.
Okay.
That's going to be fun. And I think as far as hunts go, that might be it unless we have a couple more that we're working on, but no commitments.
Gotcha. Well, you still got some time. Again, that's February 22nd. And I know this year you had said that the tables were already almost sold out, but you still have some individual entry tickets available.
All tickets sold, tables sold. We're fastest we've ever sold. We do have two sponsorship tables. They're called our Silver State level. You get 8 seats, you get bottles of wine, you get raffle tickets, you get a table gun to either keep or auction off at your table. But what those do is it's also a large donation back to the chapter for that table. But The reason it went so fast this year is we let everybody know last year that we increased the number, but we're locking you in and you get your table year after year. And that really encouraged people. They want to have their place with their people in their spot. And it was gone just like that. It was crazy. So that's it. We have two tables. They're $26.50, but they're the big tables. You get the advertising, you get in the banquet, you get the thanks on all of our web pages and that, and you're in the program. And so it's good for a business, or it's good for a guy who just wants to get a nice gun at his table.
Absolutely. Yeah. So two of those available. And if somebody listening, if you have a business or you're a hunter and you're interested, again, they can go to the website, Facebook, track you down there.
Yep. And we have, if you can get it, it's 2025banksierra.givesmart.com.
Okay. So go there. Let's get those last two tables sold out. It's one of my favorite nights of the year in Reno,
it is.
Dave.
It's a good time. Yeah, and if you guys end up buying those tables, you get to see Henry and I.
Yeah, that's a real draw.
Yeah, right? Exactly, right? Yeah. People start voiding out their tables. Yeah, we'll pass.
We have won something. You won that cooler.
Oh, man.
The first year.
First year, I won that big old cooler that you're like, I want that cooler.
Yeah, and then last year, we won the rollback, the canvas things for sleeping bags.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The bed rolls. Whole kit.
Yep.
The whole like camping kit.
Yeah. That's what my boys, every Friday night at our house when we have camp out, that's what we roll out. Who made those, Chris?
So that's Chris Eichelberg. He's the owner of Eichelberg Awnings.
Yeah. A bunch of cool, really cool stuff lined up for this year's banquet. I hope we see everybody there. And like I said, let's get those last two tables sold out. Make it another big year. Man, we got a few minutes left in this segment. This is the part of the, I call these an interview, but really this is the fun part of the conversation. Let's talk about your hunting season last year, Chris. What did you draw?
So I drew Area 10 archery mule deer, and then I drew the late season cow elk up in 7.3 through 7.5.
Rifle?
Rifle.
And the mule deer, you got spots in there. That's kind of your stomping grounds. What happened with that hunt?
We went in early, turned up two really nice bucks, and then my daughter happened to get accepted into a new school, which was the start of that season. So new school with her, I wanted to be there. Plus, it was the beginning of middle school. That's always a big one. So first time ever, turned that tag in, unfortunately, because I also drew the Utah Pine Valley muzzleloader tag for mule deer.
And you told me about that. That we may save for the next segment. There's a story there. What about the cow hunt? How'd that go?
The cow hunt was absolutely unbelievable. It was one of the funnest hunts I've done in a long time. The cows were everywhere. We turned up over 500 elk. When I finally got into them, I pushed us in a little close. We had rifles. I shot my cow at about 40 yards. My buddy, as they were literally stampeding around us, a big 6x6 knocked over a bull 10 feet, a cow 10 feet in front of us, and the bull's trying to jump over the cow as she's trying to get up, and it was mayhem. And unfortunately, he had his scope dialed all the way up to 24 power, expecting a longer range shot.
Yeah. And then there you are, 40 yards, yeah.
With 250 elk running all around us. It was one of the neatest things I've done.
And what unit was that?
We were in 73.
Okay. Yeah, that's the elk herd, I think, is across the state. All the elk herds are doing extremely well with the last couple heavy winters we've had.
Yeah.
Was that a party tag?
Yep. No, it was a party tag. Yeah, we drew it together. And
just two of you?
Yeah, just two.
Did he wind up filling his?
No.
Okay, bummer.
Sore
subject? Okay.
Sore subject, huh?
Well, shoot, I'm going to save a little bit of time here. Let's go to break. I want to get into the Utah mule deer hunt because you and I talked before the show about that one. So we'll save that for after the break. Big thanks to Battleborn Tree Care for sponsoring the show. Mike and the crew are great guys. They will care for your property like it is their own. That's Battleborn Tree Service. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry right now. Special guest in studio is Chris Costin, the chapter chair of our local Muley Fanatic Foundation. Again, the banquet is February 22nd. There are two sponsorship tables left, so let's get those sold. And now I want to jump into your mule deer hunt in Utah. That was, it didn't go the way you planned it to go. But tell me the story. So you get excited because you draw the tag, right?
Yeah, and I had been waiting on this tag because, you know, you know your points. Everybody knows kind of when they're going to draw these days. Friends get elk tags. Friends get really good deer tags. I put my hunt off. And then last year, I'm like, this is my year. I've got the time. I'm going to do it. We put a bunch of time ahead. A buddy of mine, Scott Carpenter, and I draw the tag together. We get ready. We head down there, and, you know, we're driving into, because it's muzzleloader, but we had no idea what the oak brush was going to be like there, the 90-degree temps every day. And Utah DNR, in their ultimate wisdom, decided to put out 5,300 extra tags in southern Utah the year that I drew my tag.
Oh, my which God.
They said around 60% of those folks chose Pine Valley muzzleloader.
Yeah.
So I've heard stories about general season Utah hunts, and I was kind of expecting it, but I was not expecting anything like this. It was every morning outside of camp, and we drove kind of as far back in as we could get with, you know, we just had a little quad trailer and got back into where we found the biggest roadless area, closest to the border as we could get on Nevada, because that's where all the giants hang in our country.
Yeah.
And it was a bumper-to-bumper, like, side-by-side and quad truck kind of extravaganza every morning. Like, you had to get...
Oh, you're kidding.
You weren't trying to leave camp by 4. You would get stuck in the 5 o'clock rush hour up the mountain.
Oh.
And
so it was like camping at a KOA or something.
It was incredible. Like,
oh my,
in the bad
God.
Way.
Yeah. In the bad way.
In a really bad way.
And we were there for like over 10 days. We drove, you know, we were Nevada border. Then we drove all the way over. We were looking into Zion National Park up in a couple of the other ranges over there. And that day, that was when we got really discouraged because we were at the top of this mountain and we're glassing. And we can count the people below us. We get to 23 on one side, glassing down into the canyons we're on. So I go to the other side to try and see if I can't see anything. And all I see is people at the bottom looking up at me through the windows. I think we got to like 43 people, 16 trucks.
Oh my God.
And it was like, if you shot, we called them Pine Valley 180s. If you shot a fork at horn, I mean, you were ear to ear.
That was a Pine Valley
180.
Wow.
Man. Opening day was just, it was great. People were shooting bucks, not killing them. They were running down into other folks who were shooting and killing them and dragging them off the mountain. And the biggest buck we saw, besides a couple like glimpses of other deer, but was, you know, a 24-inch wide 3x3 that came like trying to flee off the top of the mountain to get away from everybody and ran right down into a camp of
Good
hunters.
Grief.
Into a barrage.
Yeah.
Oh, it was...
What did you ever call? Why the increase in tags?
Yeah, the demand for tags down there to get out with your buddies and to go hunt, and I think they buckled under the pressure. They want to go out with their families every year. They want to have a big camp, and they want their kids to draw a tag every year.
Yeah, but these agencies, it's about wildlife management. It's not about recreation. I mean, priority is wildlife management.
Is that the...
Money. And
jeez.
The herd. I mean, it's just terrible. They're not going to get a mature deer herd. I mean, the numbers of wounded deer that are crawling or limping back into the oak brush to die is off the charts. We saw quite a few harvested, but we talked to way more people who hit them and didn't recover them.
Good
well, would
Lord.
You want, after with that many people out there, would you want to go walk around in the brush?
And the crazy thing
heck
is,
no.
Muzzleloader, there's no orange requirement.
Yeah. So somebody sees something moving in the brush and they're just going to take a shot.
Yeah.
No.
There was plenty of that, you know, and we ran into two what I would call good hunters. I mean, trail camera. These kids were hiking like us every day.
Right.
And they said, oh, you know, typical, should have been here last year. You know, they had two bucks on trail camera that were 4 points, and they had been out all year, same like as us. There's three big ranges primarily that you focus on. And, yeah, it was a bummer to say the least. So came home with two bowls of tag soup and probably never going back to
I was going to say, needless to say, you won't be putting in for –
limited
Utah
entry.
Tags,
So Scott drew the tag too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and that guy is like, he gets a little ornery when people are like,
I could see that,
brighten you in the morning, every morning, 90 degree afternoons, just sweating it out on the hills and hiking through that thick brush and turning up no deer. Yeah. And we were finding water everywhere and no good tracks. It was weird. It was a little bit of new country, but I mean, it was great mule deer habitat. The deer were there, but I think the big guys knew they could get into that thick oak brush and there's water in the bottom of the creeks. They never have to come out.
Well, and a hunt really sucks when, you know, you're racing out of your camp because you hear the sound of a UTV or something.
Get up. It's time
Hurry
to go.
Up, get up. Get up. We got to get ahead of these guys.
Oh, yeah. That's my nightmare.
Oh, it's.
Yeah. I'd rather not see another human being for an entire week and only turn up like a 3-point rather than do that with the hopes that I turn up like a 180. I just don't like like the rat race.
That's
thing.
When I put on the 3-day pack, and I'm just like, okay,
I'm going as far
I'll
as
I'll be
I,
back.
Yeah.
That was the hard part when we finally kind of figured out where there was some good country that people really couldn't, you know, access so easily. It's like, you know, we got 2 days with at least a day backpack trip into, because I was like, we're going right to the edge of the border.
Yeah,
we'll just use Onyx and. That was the last like good country as we were driving out, and
man,
both of us were just burnt.
And you said how many extra tags they gave out?
5,300 was the number I heard.
See, and that's the thing. I always think like, well, I'll just go deeper than anybody else. I'll go longer. But when you're talking about 5,300 additional people, holy smoke, you can't go deep enough to get away from people.
No, and we went down, you know, tried to get into the big wilderness areas,
right?
And again, every big wilderness had a main road that was grandfathered in and through it. And you know how people are.
Oh, yeah.
They don't stay. So there was new roads cut. There was side-by-sides and quads where they shouldn't have been. You know, anywhere where you could park and take off on a hike, you were parking with three or four other trucks or side-by-sides. And
was it mostly Utah plates, or was there a lot of out-of-staters, too?
That's a good question. We saw some out of state, but almost every big camp, like I've never rolled up to a camp that had like 15 or 20 RVs in it. And they were mostly Utah.
Yeah. I mean,
some of the biggest camps I've ever seen. It was.
And, did you walk into their camp and like spike their punch with Everclear so you knew they weren't camping hunting the next day?
Yeah.
If I ever do general season.
Yeah. Like, hey, you guys, I brought some drinks.
Let's go.
It's like, well, there's 30 people out.
Good grief. Yeah. I've heard horror stories, not out of Utah, mostly out of Idaho, like bigger, you know, the over-the-counter stuff and just crowded with people. But yeah, you're the first person I've talked to that has a story like that out of Utah.
I'm the same. I mean, Idaho, we were up on, 22A up by the Hell's Canyon and Weezer area. A lot of folks, but a lot of country to spread out into.
Right.
Nothing like this. And even one time there, we were hiking up on a bull and some other dude shot it right above us. I mean, so you get used to that. It's public land, but
right.
I've never, ever, ever been in anything like this. It was unbelievable.
Man, on a more positive note, how many points are you at for like bull in Nevada? Anything you're looking forward to that you think, hey, this is my year?
I'm pretty sure everybody knows I'm going to get my desert and my California this year.
Perfect. Yeah.
I know I'm one of two that's going to get a moose.
And Dave. Yeah.
And then
we'll go together.
Pretty much guaranteed the mountain goat. So no, I have, this is my first year I can put back in for my bull.
Oh, okay.
Last year was my first year that I could put back in for antelope, but I'm feeling pretty good on horn shorter. I got a fair number of points there. Good for the freezer. Mule deer, I'm always excited for, because if I don't get super lucky like I did a few years ago and draw one of my top choices, I know I'll be up in the rubies in my favorite country, getting high and deep and not seeing anybody.
Yeah.
And then, I don't
know. How many points are you at for sheep?
13 or so, 14, 15-ish.
For both? Okay.
Yeah, for all my stuff. I had a little bit of a snafu. I was lucky enough to have a good grandpa who got me in getting points early. And then, I got into college and fighting fire, and I did the terrible thing and let 2 years slip and realized
lost it all.
What I had done.
Yeah.
It probably cost me my sheep, but we'll see.
Dave, you're at what on California now?
25.
25. So you're getting there too. Yeah. We just talked about that this last weekend, riding in the truck. But
yeah.
And then max points is what again? 30?
I think it's 30 or 32, something like
32?
That.
32? Okay.
Something like that.
I did the same thing. Yeah. In fact, my brother just moved back to town, coincidentally, right at the end of Fawn Lane there. But he did the same thing too, because, you know, when you're like early 20s, it's like, oh, I don't, it's points, whatever. Or in his case, going up to Idaho, it was like, I can hunt over the counter. Why do I want points in Nevada? And then winding up back here and going, oh, I let what go to waste?
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Oh, no. So mule deer, horns shorter. And then obviously you said you're going to draw the moose tag with Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, we're going together.
Yeah. Oh, we saw him in 73. Yeah. He was a piece away, but it was a moose for sure. Oh, yeah. So that was exciting.
This last weekend, Henry and I went with his brother and his dad, and we saw the most antelope we've ever seen in one group.
I've never seen a herd that big.
Yeah, it was. I was trying to count them the best I could. There were over 200 antelope.
Wow. Yeah.
They just kept coming off this mountain. We're like, is there a door there or something? They just kept coming off the mountain, just across the road in front of us, and then they all sat out there, and I thought, oh, what area is this? Okay, this is the horn shorter than ears. This will be a good spot.
I've never seen that many.
No.
I've never seen a herd of over 200 animals.
None of us.
It was incredible. Like,
it was nuts.
Yeah. We're all sitting in the truck going, oh, look, there's more. It was nonstop.
They're still coming off the mountain. You're like, wow, from where?
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was so cool. We sat there for a good 10 minutes or so.
Just staring.
Just watching them pile up into this huge group.
It's unbelievable. Everything over the last 2 years, the antelope, the elk, the chucker.
Yeah.
Oh, man, the chucker.
Everything.
Everything, except for mule deer.
Hopefully we get a winner here soon. Before we end the show, Chris, one more time, plug how people can get in touch with you and get involved in the Muley Fanatic Foundation.
Probably the best way is Instagram or Facebook, MFF Sierra Front or Sierra Front Chapter. And then the other way is muleyfoundation.org. And go to our chapters, and that'll link you to the Nevada chapter, and that has all my contact info.
Hey, sincere thank you for coming in and doing this, Chris.
Yes, thank you very much.